Blog Talk Radio.
Thursday, the big game, the first game of the season. My team, the New Orleans Saints against the Green Bay Packers. I cannot wait. I know you can't wait. But what we can wait for is Barack Obama's speech, where he's going to call for much more spending. Fat cats paying their fair share. Road projects. You know, he's going to do the whole FDR thing, where he's going to talk about spending more money that we don't have to put people to work so he can get reelected, so he can spend more money that we don't have. It's going to be terrible. I won't be watching the speech. Of course, I can't stand the sound of the guy's voice. I mean, seriously. Tonight, the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report. We're going to start calling it the C. Robert Jones Sit Rep Situation Report. Today's date is September 2nd, 2011, AD. We're here in beautiful Washington, D.C., United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. So let's get right down to it. Barack Obama bluffed. And in the movie Twins, Arnold Schwarzenegger's character schools his brother, played by Danny DeVito, if you're going to bluff, prepare to have your bluff called. And indeed, John Boehner called that bluff. Dude thought that he was going to get his way. He's the president of the United States. Earlier in his tenure as president, he complained that when he sat down for the first time in the Oval Office, he noticed that the phones were rather plain. He thought that he was going to be getting some super secret, double knot secret James Bond style phones. Kind of see in the movies. He just had a plain old phone. He said to his staff, hey, where are the fancy phones? I'm the president of the United States. I'm supposed to have some fancy phones here. Of course, he was kidding, I think. But that's his mentality. He thinks, well, he's supposed to get what he wants when he wants because he's the president of the United States. Protocol be damned. So this controversy over Obama's address to the joint session of Congress, to a joint session of Congress, kind of underscores, well, no, it does. It underscores his ignorance of history, as well as his lack of understanding regarding the Constitution of the United States of America, and how utterly lacking he is in political skills, other than giving a good speech with the aid of a fine teleprompter. Voters and potential voters seem to instinctively understand which issues transcend partisan politics and thus are appropriate for a presidential address before a joint session of Congress. Now, the Obama administration has downplayed the figures for the rest of 2011 and 2012, stating that, well, even though Obama's saying to us that even though he pretty much guaranteed, he didn't come right out and guarantee it, but he said that if his stimulus package were passed, that unemployment would not go above 8%. He said if his stimulus package did not work, that he would be a one-term president. Well, he also said that he and Joe Biden, as a result of their policies, both he and Joe Biden, he said that under his plan, he has saved or created. Now they're leaving out the saved part. He's just saying he created 2 million jobs. So I guess that's just 2 million. Because as of last month, not a single job was created. Not a single job. The figures just came out today. I watched it this morning on Fox and Friends. Not one single job, you all. Not one. And so the White House has stated that, well, there aren't going to be any real gains, and so we better prepare for it. So what we have here is the new normal, what's going to be normal from here on out. So get used to it, folks. Kind of like back in 1998 when gas was 99 cents per gallon in Chicago. And on the south side of Chicago, that was too high. So a lot of us would drive just a few miles, cross the border into Indiana, and get our gas just across the border. Because just across the border in Indiana, gas was 89 cents a gallon. Gradually, gas prices increased until they reached $1.50. That was high. The gas prices reached $2. We complained. We groaned. $2 for a gallon of gas? Then it was $2.50. And we complained. And we blamed George Bush. $3, $3.50, $4 a gallon in some places. We complained, but we paid at the pump. Now, if gas prices sink to $2.75, $2.85, $2.90 a gallon, we're like, phew, wow, finally gas prices have gone down. They're getting back to normal. Finally, we're getting back to normal at $2.85. Whew, man, that was tough for a while. So this is what's happening here in the White House. They're already conditioning the American people to accept and get used to 9.1% unemployment. That's just the way it's going to be. Get used to it. Don't worry about it. Deal with it. So I suspect that the White House is kind of is thinking that, well, after a few months of conditioning the American people to accept this new norm, then we'll be good. Everything will be great. So, we're now back to this deal with the president and his joint session of Congress deal. American voters have a history of not responding well when this joint session of Congress deal is misused. Giving a political stump speech before a joint session of Congress is simply not being presidential, some would say. We are most familiar with the annual rite of the President's State of the Union addresses, with its stylized partisanship, in addition to the 12th Amendment of the Constitution mandates that electoral votes for president be counted before a joint session of Congress. Diplomatic courtesy has long honored the practice of allowing an important foreign head of state or government to address the nation by speaking before a joint session of Congress as well. Finally, great Americans, alive and dead alike, may also be honored by a special joint session of Congress. These are acceptable reasons for Congress to meet in a joint session. When a president addresses the United States of America, this great nation, from inside the U.S. Capitol or any other occasion, he's expected, it's demanded, that he speak on matters of genuine national importance, not partisan advantage. This is because under our Constitution system of separation of powers, a president has to be invited to come to Capitol Hill and speak. That's just the way it is. The State of the Union address evolved from the command in Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution, and it states, he shall, from time to time, give to Congress information of the State of the Union and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. Period. Time to time was quickly interpreted to mean an annual report. Many early presidents made this report in writing, but by the early 20th century, it became standard practice for the president to speak on the State of the Union before a joint session of Congress. It is now also a tradition that in lieu of a State of the Union address, A newly augmented president will address a joint session of Congress shortly after he assumes the office with an outline of his first term and his agenda, billed as an economic or budget address. Far less happy tradition has also developed. Truman, Johnson and Ford each addressed a joint session of Congress after being sworn in upon the death or resignation of their predecessors. So we've had that. But outside the annual State of the Union address, and transitions of power, presidents have pretty much limited their addresses before a joint session of Congress to major issues of national security. Examples include FDR, a day that shall live in infamy speech after Pearl Harbor. FDR again at the Yalta Conference in the closing days of World War II. Truman announced the Marshall Plan. Carter announced SALT II. And Reagan, he reported on the Geneva Summit. The man that the press has been trying to compare Obama to as a communicator made only three special addresses to Congress in 8 years. And in addition to the Geneva Summit address, Ronald Reagan also spoke to Central America, or spoke on Central America. And I believe it was April 1983. Reagan's April 1981 speech before a joint session was billed as an address on the economy. But the real purpose was to reassure both Congress and the nation that Reagan was capable of fulfilling the duties of office after the assassination attempt a month earlier. And that address is a major, or rather, in some cases, a minor masterpiece of sound economic policies, a genuine bipartisanship, and grace under pressure. Commodities, I suspect, will be in short supply next Thursday night when no one will be watching. Maybe Obama's grandmama, certainly his wife and two children, but that'll probably be about it. Oh, some will have the TV on, but they'll have that other TV over there with the game on. Any self-respecting man will also have the game on somewhere in the room. I don't care if it's a radio, the internet, iPad, mobile phone. The game will be on. And folks will worry about getting the details of Obama's speech the next day. George H.W., or W. as we like to call him, made two special addresses to Congress in 4 years. Just two. On September 9th, 2009, Barack Obama addressed a joint session of Congress on health care. His address was no more successful than Clinton's in swaying the voters. But Congress went ahead anyway. So what we have here, folks, is a failed attempt on Obama's part once again. It's a terrible mess the guy's putting us in. And what he's really doing is making a fool of himself. And I'm almost embarrassed for him because he tried to get a little bit cute with John Boehner. And I guess because Boehner decides he's going to squirt a few tears every now and then, that Obama thought that Boehner was a punk and a pushover, and that basically all he had to do was ask or make a half-hearted attempt and indeed announce. How arrogant was he to announce that he was going to go ahead and give his speech before getting approval and a proper invitation from Congress? I'm C. Robert Jones, and you're on the C. Robert Jones Sit Rep. We'll be right back.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There are so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Roark from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it, and I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
Barack Obama promised us a better economy, but he gave us bigger government, higher taxes, and skyrocketing debt. 2.5 million jobs lost, largest deficit in history, $14.3 trillion national debt. The picture is clear.
Nobody's looking to raise taxes right now. We're talking about potentially 2013.
We can't afford four more years of Barack Obama. Help America change direction. The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Greetings, folks. T-Mont. Yeah, I'm back again. And I'm going to get on this soapbox. Just got through listening to Obama. Words out of his own mouth. Well, you know, we've created over 2 million jobs for the last year. And there's no doubt we still got a long way to go. Folks, if they've created 2 million jobs, why haven't the unemployment numbers changed? Going down. They're not going south. They're still headed north. Look, folks, we just had a meeting today, a company I work for. And this company is trying, they're rolling out a new product, unified communication servers, blah, blah, blah. And one of the guys in the meeting that works for my company asked the question, well, what about when we want support? We don't speak Indian and Arabic. And the guy said, oh, no, no, no. You know, we follow the sun on technical support. Folks, let me tell you what that is. In an effort to try and not be perceived as sending all of the jobs overseas, they got this thing called follow the sun support. In other words, wherever the sun is, that's where your technical support calls or customer service calls will be answered. Where, guess what? Every time I call, because I work in the daytime, I still get somebody in India. Damn that. There's no support. Oh, I'm telling you, there's even Cisco. When I call them, I have to demand that they transfer me to somebody here in America. One, I can't hardly understand what the hell they're saying. And two, the level of service is not what I am accustomed to. With the amount of money that we pay Cisco in support, give me a break. Folks, they cannot fix this.
The jobs are overseas and with illegal immigrants. When will you wake up? You guys talking about, but you haven't given Obama enough time to fix the problem. He can't fix this. The jobs are overseas, damn it. That's where they have gone. That's why people don't have jobs to go and apply for. Okay? And y'all just don't get it. Technology has changed things. And most of these folks providing you with the support, guess what? They read from a script. You know, some folk I can call, or if people call me in my company and ask me to help them with something, because I've dealt with the problems before, I've got experience. When they start telling me the symptoms, I just say, oh, do X, Y, Z. Boom, problem solved. With these folks, when you call them, okay, turn your computer off. Okay, now unplug it. Now wait for 30 seconds. Now plug it back in. Now, hold on, David, what you mean? Sir, let's start over again. Unplug your computer. They can't. It's so frustrating. But at any rate, I'm on this because I'm so tired of hearing folk talking about creating more jobs. We have jobs. Bring them back. Damn. And you know what? This mentality, a guy sent me a video, and it's the last thing I'm going to close. This woman here in DeKalb County, barely coherent in her language skills, was bitching because there was a glitch with the state and the food stamps payments didn't load to their EBT cards, and she was complaining, I'm not going to tell my six kids that I can't feed them tonight. See, I'm not talking about charity folk or people that have fell upon rough times, but I'll guarantee you she's been on food stamps most of her life. She's got six kids, obviously no man in the picture anywhere, okay? Six probably illegitimate kids, and her expectation is that we owe her food stamps, and the money is coming from the folks who go and work. That is just a part of the symptom that has come into play because this attitude that we owe you something has been perpetrated upon working American people, all right? And so that's where we get this attitude from. She's got six kids, and we owe her that food stamp money. I mean, come on, folks. Y'all, the Democrats and the Republicans are screwing the hell out of us, and y'all won't even stand up. That's right. You can't ride a man unless he bend over, and all y'all on all fours. T-Mod out till next time.
Okay, T-Mod in Georgia. Are we on all fours? Oh, that's not a good visual. I tell you what. The news came out today. And you know what? I have to be very honest about this. When I see the job numbers come out every Thursday, and then the revised numbers that come out on Friday, honestly, I'm going to go ahead and be honest with you guys. I'm always honest, but here's a little bit of honesty that you'll probably be shocked at. I'm not so sure whether I really want the news to be good news. I'm not so sure whether or not I want the numbers to go down. And in fact, I'll admit somewhat shamefully that when the numbers come out on Thursday, when the Fox and Friends co-host put the numbers out there, I'm hoping that they stay the way they are. Is that bad? Is that weird? Because that's really how I feel about it. It's more like, okay, because if the numbers stay stagnant, then the chances of Barack Obama's reelection decrease. And the worse it is for him and his administration. Is that bad? Is that weird? But if the numbers go down, then Obama can claim credit for bringing the economy back. And then those independents, who are all too important for next year, well, they may give him another chance. And then it'll be too late. Because Obama will feel as though he has some sort of a mandate. And then he'll continue on with his plan to fundamentally transform the United States of America into something that obviously we can see that we don't want. So I'm kind of thinking that, well, if we let the numbers stay stagnant and even just get a little bit worse, if that happens, then Obama will be gone. Then we can get a president in office, a Republican, perhaps Perry, maybe even Romney. He would be the lesser of two evils, I suppose. And we can reverse some of these god-awful policies. And perhaps, just perhaps, bring America back from the brink of total destruction, financially and otherwise. Is that wrong? It is, isn't it? Well, I put it out there. I don't know if any of you feel the same way. But damn it, I openly root for those numbers to stay just as they are. So here we have a situation where the U.S. job growth is virtually stagnant in August as a cascade of lousy economic data combined with political gridlock in Washington. And employers aren't hiring. The Labor Department said on Friday that non-farm payrolls were unchanged last month. And the private sector added just 17,000 jobs. An analyst had forecast a mild increase of 75,000 jobs. That's bad. And as I stated, I'm not so sure whether or not how I actually feel about it. I want to see this president fail. Just like Barack Obama, I'm not just as my man Rush Limbaugh said early on. I want Barack Obama to fail. Now, some say that why would you want your president to fail? If he fails, then America fails. I don't agree with that. If Obama fails, then that means his agenda fails, and America is saved. America is spared. The wealth and prosperity of our children and grandchildren, spared, saved. In my mind, and now this may seem a bit extreme, in my mind, if Obama fails, it is akin to a Fidel Castro failing. It's akin to Benito Mussolini failing. It's akin to every Marxist dictator failing. It's like Hugo Chavez, if he fails. Is that good for Venezuela or bad? So I want Barry to fail. And that's why I can honestly say that when the numbers come out every Thursday and then revised numbers come out on Friday, I honestly, and I know it sounds bad, I honestly root for the numbers to stay stagnant, to not improve. Because if Barack Obama is able to bring that jobless number down to somewhere around 8%, then he wins. And quite possibly he wins another term in office. And if he wins another term in office, folks, he'll be able to send the dagger home and finish off the United States of America. Now, people say to me, hey, you know, the United States has to evolve. It can't stay the same forever. Well, yeah, okay, fine. But our ideals, our traditions, our political system as we know it, our economic system, free enterprise, capitalist system, do those have to change as well? No. What does America need to really change? Perhaps we should consider changing our attitudes individually as it relates to gay rights. Certainly in the ways of, we have just a bit of a ways to go with our racial issues. But what else? What else do we really need to change about America? We know through history that America has had its ups and downs financially. We've gone through quite a few recessions in our time, depressions as well. But we always have bounced back from those. Do we need to change the capitalist system into something different? Or as Van Jones would have said, eco-capitalism. He doesn't even know what that means. He admitted so. So what really needs to change? And what change is it that we can really believe in? I think this country's done well. In fact, I know it's done well. We have prospered more than any other country. And we have risen to become the most powerful nation on earth, the most prosperous. So what sort of change do we need? I would really like to know. Because I think that we've done very, very well. Our capitalist system is a model for the world over. And here we are now, faltering, because we've gotten a little bit too comfortable. We've decided that because we're the richest nation on earth, that we can afford to give other people's money away to those less fortunate, that we can afford to be our brother's keeper, if just for a little while. But that little while has turned into decades. Decades. When FDR signed into law the New Deal, it was really all about taking care of the little guy, just for a while. There was a time when welfare for poor people, white and black, people of all races, was a very a short-term deal. It was like for 6 weeks. It's like what unemployment used to be. Does anyone remember when unemployment compensation or benefits were right around 13 weeks? And now it's like 99 weeks. But there was a time not so long ago when one would receive unemployment benefits for just 13 weeks. And if you were really in dire hardship, you might, the state might consider a short extension of another 6 weeks, but that was it. You're done after that. You either had to go on food stamps or public assistance or whatever they're calling it these days or back then. But now, 99 weeks is the normal. And even though public assistance or public aid, as it was once called in my neighborhood, was a very short term. It turned out to be decades. That's where we get the term welfare mothers from. Well, once their benefits were about to run out, what you do is pretty much pop out another baby, and you're covered again for another couple of years. It turned out to be a lifelong deal for a lot of folks. Lifelong. Some children I know personally grew up from the time of their birth on welfare until the time they turned 18. That's a long time. 43rd Indiana, I know some welfare folks who passed on through the welfare system from one generation to the next. 43rd Indiana and Chicago. So now the Obama administration is attempting to lower our expectations. No longer, you remember when the expectation was for excellence? Do you remember when we used to play baseball, football, various sports in school, and the champions received trophies and accolades and were heroes? All the girls wanted us. Remember that? Now, everybody gets a trophy. Everybody's a winner, and thus no one is a winner. Everybody gets a trophy. My youngest son, Nicholas, played soccer. Even though his teams would often come in at the very bottom of the rung and wins at the end of the season, he got a trophy. I viewed some of those trophies the other day when I visited him. He got a trophy. Every kid got a trophy. Expectations for excellence, winning, has been dumbed down. We're no longer a nation of winners and losers. We're just middle-of-the-road people now. It's all about being in the middle of the road. And that's supposed to be good enough. So now the White House has telegraphed that the speech this coming Thursday, which absolutely no one will be watching, Barack Obama is going to lower expectations. Hasn't he done so by simply being elected president of the United States? Hasn't he lowered our expectations enough? He's president of the United States. How much lower can we get? He's bowing deeply to every head of state and potentate you can think of. And he's embarrassed for the United States. So he goes around apologizing to everybody who will listen. How low can we go? So this speech this coming Thursday will be all about, well, we're just going to have to get used to it. We're just going to have to get used to high unemployment. We're just going to have to get used to the way things are for a while. And then he's going to call on Congress to spend more money we don't have. He's going to try to put Congress in what in Chicago we like to call a trick bag, where he's going to call on Congress to create jobs by spending money that we don't have for new road construction, bridges, all that, all the stuff we really need, no doubt, but that we don't have the money to pay for. Short-term job growth, or those shovel-ready type jobs that are not so shovel-ready, just so he'll make himself look good. Because right now, Barack Obama's re-election campaign is on life support. The word around town is that he's pretty much done. stick a fork in Obama, he's done. Not a lot of people realize that John McCain was leading in the polls leading up to the election. Right up until the economy went belly up. At that point, folks were calling for change. And they believed that Barack Obama was the man of change. So Barack Obama benefited greatly from the collapse of our economy just before the election in 2008. How ironic is it that Barack Obama is now the victim of a bad economy? Is he a victim, though? Because some would say that Obama has engineered all of this by having his head up his ass, by not knowing what he's doing. Or perhaps he knows exactly what he's doing, some would say, and he's collapsing the economy on purpose. Either way, dude's pretty much done. There's no way he's going to right this ship before 2012. So either he's going to have to ride off into the sunset in 2012 or cheat to be reelected. Create some sort of a catastrophe where he can't leave office. Suspend habeas corpus. Suspend the elections. Something drastic is going to have to happen. Because I believe this guy doesn't want to leave this job. He's not done yet. So let's bring about the conspiracy theories for now. Let's bring it out here. What's dude going to do? Just be Jimmy Carter all over again? Ride off into the sunset? Does anybody think that? Or is he going to engineer a way to stay in office? Is he going to cheat like he did in Chicago? It was Obama's team that leaked that divorce papers of Jerry Ryan, the actress, her husband, Senator Ryan, who was running for the seat that Obama held before he was elected president. And Mr. Ryan was leading in the polls, Obama far behind. With just 4 months before the senatorial election, out pops this divorce decree, sealed documents, not so sealed anymore, where the actress, Jerry Ryan, is claiming, who is from Chicago, Evanston, by the way, who stated in a deposition that her husband had asked her repeatedly to engage in sordid sexual practices, group sex, wife swapping, all that. She declined, thus their marriage fell apart, and so on. So now Ryan has to drop out with 3 months left. How convenient. In comes Alan Keyes, brilliant but nutty as a damn fruitcake. The Republicans are desperate. They have no one. There's no one in Chicago they can get. Alan Keyes comes from out of town, Baltimore, someplace like that. Alan Keyes does his best to stay sane before 3.5 months, to no avail. Thus, Barack Obama wins mightily and becomes the next senator for the state of Illinois. That's how it all happened. If someone had not leaked those sealed divorce documents, or previously sealed, Obama would still be in Illinois somewhere, in the state house voting present. It didn't work out that way. Because Barack Obama knew how to work the Chicago way. Because that's the Chicago way. That's where we get this term Chicago-style politics. So Barack Obama's backed into a corner on his heels. The economy has not improved, not one bit. It's getting worse. And Obama can't blame him way out of this, himself out of this anymore. So come next November, the gloves are going to have to come off. With the GOP, with you and me, we're going to have to be out there watching, reporting, participating, because Barack Obama is going to take the Chicago gloves off. And it's going to get down and dirty. Because dude may not know how to fight for his policies, and thank God for that, but he does know how to cheat. Because Obama has proven the Chicago way works. And it's not about winning. It's about your opponent losing. His way and the Chicago way is to create a scenario where you eliminate the competition, leaving only you as the choice, thus no choice at all. It works in Chicago. Obama employed this strategy twice. To win the state house, he eliminated one of his closest allies and mentors. The lady had promised the seat to Obama once she retired. She wanted to serve out just one more term. Obama stabbed her in the back, pretty much had her eliminated from the race by challenging her petition signatures. Had her eliminated from the race, took her spot, and was elected to the state Senate. Then, just a couple of years later, someone in his campaign arranged for sealed divorce documents to be exposed just when Barack Obama was about to get his ass kicked in that race. Down and dirty. So, November 12th, all next year, leading up to November 12th, we're going to see the gloves come off. Because Obama's going to seek to eliminate Perry as best he can, marginalize Perry, marginalize Romney, marginalize Bachman. And his way is not to defeat them heads up, because Barack Obama's pretty much a moron. So he's going to cheat. Because he has no policies to run on. He has no real achievements. Obamacare is a mess. Gays in the military thing, a mess. Hopefully we'll get that squared away with the new administration. So let's be vigil. Let's take care. Let's get involved in our local precincts, our local races. Let's get out there and get ready to participate, to volunteer if necessary, to get the word out. Let's do our own getting in people's faces, as Obama says that he wants his minions to do. Let's convince some folks this guy doesn't mean America any good at all. None, mind you. None. After these brief messages, we'll be back and we'll wrap it up for the week. You're on with the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report.
Good morning, January 20th, 2017, the last day of Barack Obama's 8 years as president.
8 tough years for many as unemployment continues climbing.
With debt to China reaching record levels, some analysts believe the Chinese have overtaken the United States.
8 years ago, we were promised hope. Today, many believe their American dream has been lost.
The Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising. He promised to change direction. $800 billion in stimulus. Trillions for government health care. 2 million jobs. Gone. Left turn after left turn. America's headed the wrong way fast. 6 million foreclosures. $14 trillion in debt. $500 billion in higher taxes. And the worst long-term unemployment in generations. Don't let Obama drive us to disaster. Change direction. Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
This is Economic Jeopardy, where your elected officials jeopardize your future. Let's meet our contestants. From Nevada, the man who passes bills that he hasn't even read, Senator Harry Reid. His hobbies include hunting, blackjack, and blaming George Bush. From Ohio, the Speaker of the House, who's been at speaking about spending cuts, Representative John Boehner. Mr. Speaker. He enjoys a good smoke after dinner and being outdoors in the sunshine. And sitting in for President Obama is Prompton, the President's teleprompter. Inside Prompton are the components of the federal government that provide multiple redundancies, overlapping programs, leading to a low performance threshold. And now, here's your host of Economic Jeopardy, Alex Quebec.
In this exciting game, we've started the contestants at the same level as our national debt, negative $14 trillion. Which is 92 trillion in yen. Today's topics are earmarks, entitlements, spending cuts, debt ceiling, and reducing $14 trillion debt. Speaker Boyardiner, what topic would you like to choose?
I don't think I have one off the top of my head.
Well, Speaker Bahuni, how about spending cuts?
Read my lips. We're going to cut spending.
We know there have to be cuts made, and we've made them.
We see, Senator Reid, that you've proposed reducing your $14 trillion debt to $13.99 trillion. Okay, perhaps the president programmed his teleprompter to actually choose a topic.
I'll take Marriage Protection Act for $1,000, Dave.
That's not a topic, and my name's not Dave.
Childhood obesity for $300.
No, none of those are actually...
Democratic fundraisers for $1
million. Republicans have blocked everything. They do not want us to accomplish anything.
Say, Dave... Can I keep the secret $105 billion from healthcare?
Hell no, you can't!
Contestants, please!
I'm not laughing because it's not funny.
So will none of these guys even try to solve our debt problem?
Hell yes, I can.
Promotional consideration provided by Pelosaroni, the San Francisco treat, a liberal supply of donkey wax. And one lucky contestant will go home with a golfer's dream vacation package. Economic Jeopardy was rendered before a digital audience.
All right, we're back with the C. Robert Jones Report tonight. Thank you all for listening. Citizen, Beach Bomb, Blog Talk King, Net King, New, Patriot Greg, Hamilton Marines, my buddies from the Marine Corps, Republican Marine, and all my guests. Thank you for joining me tonight. There's so many things you could be doing other than joining me and listening to my show, so I appreciate you. Stay tuned for the test coming up at 9. It's going to be a great show up. Now, Tesla's got a great show coming up. Thank you all for being here. Have a great weekend. And let's look forward to next week. Start a football season. Get your fantasy football teams ready. We're going to have a great time. Oh, and don't forget to join us for 9/11, our 9/11 special. It's Sunday, 9/11. Talking about that day, where we were, what we were doing, what we thought, how we felt. Be there with me, Tesla, and Southern Sense. Good night, y'all. Head on over to Tesla's show. I'm on my way there now. Good night. Steve Albert Jones, Conservative Speaker.